Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Peter Guy joins us this morning on the phone. His newest book is called Northernmost, and it sounds like a fascinating tale of ancestors and also kind of like those plot lines where you've got the person in the past and something happens in the past, and then you flash forward to current times, and how do the two things connect? How does the one inform the other? Hey, Peter, good morning, and thanks so much for being our guest.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So how would you give when people ask you to, hey, what's your newest book about? What do you tell them?
Well, it's always such a tough question to answer because, of course, it's about 1,000 different things, as most novels are. But at its core, it's a story of two timelines, and one of them is historical. It takes place in the 1890s, mostly in Arctic Norway and in a place called Spitsbergen, which we now call Svalbard, which is halfway between the North Pole and the northernmost tip of Norway. And it's the story of a man who, down on his luck, has taken a hard job as a seal hunter, and sort of has this religious experience of being deserted on this polar island, and how he survives. And then many generations later, and more than 100 years later, his four times great granddaughter is going through some sort of desolate times of her own, and to the her ancestral village, which is a town called Hammerfest, Norway, and starts to make some discoveries about her life and about her marriage that are maybe a little more complicated and unexpected than she'd think. And those two stories come together in a way that's hopefully, you know, the two storylines sort of, rather than just existing next to each other, hopefully amplify and help make the other story more meaningful.
They're both people that find themselves alone and kind of adrift at a time when that is not what they wanted and that is not what they expected. One of the things that I'm always curious about when I talk with authors who write about, well, I guess when I say, I should say, when I talk with local authors who write about Scandinavian history or Scandinavian characters, is that many Minnesotans are a lot closer to their family of origin in terms of maybe they're in touch, maybe they're still in touch with current relatives in Sweden or Norway. And maybe they have delved into genealogy and they know a lot about their ancestors from Sweden or Norway or Denmark or Finland, whatever it might be. Is it easier for you, or do you think that it lends something in particular to your writing, that closeness that you and or your listening audience has with kind of where many of us came from?
You know, I think that it does. One of the questions that I'm often asked with respect to Northernmost is about how to authenticate a voice that's more than 100 years old, right? Like, how could you imagine what these people sound like and how they look at each other and those sorts of things? And my answer is always, I sort of jokingly say, well, you don't have to even imagine. Here in Minneapolis, you can go to Ingebrigtsen's market on Lake Street the week before Christmas and just look at how the husbands and wives talk to each other, and that's how it's been for as long as I've ever known my relatives, which is half a century now. And so I think that it is. I think that I don't know if it's true that Minnesotans of Scandinavian descent are more stoic and have that quality on a higher level than others, but certainly we do. And I think that that's definitely part of why I'm drawn to writing about them and writing about people from that part of the world, because there's something that's really attractive as a novelist about characters who live an introspective life, who live a life of, you know, I guess sort of a quiet existence. It's hard to make dramatic. And so that challenge is one of the reasons that I've chose to write about them.
I have been reading lately some I've run across a couple lately of some fabulous Scandinavian authors. And I'm curious, I'm going to step outside talking to you as an author for a moment, and I'm going to talk with you as a reader. I'm fascinated to know your take on, I adore the work of these authors. I find their prose so beautiful because they are Scandinavian authors. I feel like they speak to me. They feel like family members standing around me, their characters. And yet I'm wondering, do we have the author or in this instance the translator to thank for that? Because the language is so beautiful, and yet it's had to be translated out of its original Swedish or Norwegian into English for us.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both going on in that situation. A translator can only translate the page of writing that's in front of them. So if that page of writing and those pages collectively have a quality of beauty or have a quality of elegance that's exceptional, then their job is even more intense and more complicated, because they have not only to literally transcribe from one language to another, but to affect the same beauty and the same elegance. And I think not all translators are capable of that, just like not all writers are capable of it. But the best translators certainly are. An enormous part of their responsibility is to that elegance, to the elegance of the original language, right? And you're right. There is absolutely a sort of glut of terrific Scandinavian literature being translated now, and it's not just, we should add, the sort of crime novels that are so prevalent, although those are pretty terrific fun too.
Oh, but Stieg Larsson's books were, I think, absolutely exquisite, and I didn't even try to read the one or ones that were written after his death. I just thought, no, it was kind of perfect the way it is. But
yeah.
Frederick Backman is probably up there in my list of all-time favorite authors. I just feel like my relatives, or perhaps the way I imagine some of my relatives,
exactly,
are surrounding me when I read his books. And I just read a debut novel by a Norwegian author called Good Dogs Don't Make It to the South Pole. And it was, again, it was exactly what you were talking about in terms of a woman who's living alone, and she's talking with her dog, and she's reading to her dog, and she's having this very introspective experience as she's just processing all of these different things. And of course, it's told from the dog's point of view. I found it delightful. But again, the prose was so beautiful. And we're I tell you, words, aren't we just the luckiest people? Do you ever say to yourself, I can't believe I'm doing this? Because you must have been a reader first.
Of course, I was a reader first, and for a long time. In fact, I sort of thought of becoming a reader as a responsibility. Like, I couldn't even really consider becoming a writer until I read enough to know better. And I do, of course, all the time think about how lucky I am. It's a difficult endeavor to try to make a living writing literary novels, but it's also, and I was just talking about this with my wife, how important a part of it is of my identity to continue to do this, and how much meaning it makes for me, how much I learn from the books that I write. And that might sound a little backwards, but it's true. That the experience of writing a book is totally immersive, and you're immersed, of course, in your own imagination, but that imagination is conjuring other lives and other characters and situations that you want to live vicariously through, or you wouldn't be writing about them. And part of that experience for me is to learn more empathy and to learn more sympathy and understand the world better through the lens of these characters that I create. And I think that that's what happens for the best readers too, right? Like, you get invested in the world, and all of a sudden you forget about the chaos of our existence, especially now, maybe. And it's a great relief, and it's an even greater relief to write about it.
Well, and it's wonderful to live a life where you're dealing with somebody else's problems, because somebody else's problems are almost universally you know, either easier, that's easier, much easier to deal with than what I'm going through. Or you can say, oh, thank heavens, that's not me. I'm only dealing with blah, blah, blah. So
Right. Other
people's problems, you know, in a literary sense, and you can always set them down and go eat chocolate. So there's always that, which is wonderful. Something that we obviously appreciate. I'm curious to know your experience of the virtual book launch and the virtual book conversations with readers. Many of the authors I've talked to on this show have really been delighted with the process, but of course not everybody, and not everybody write at once.
Yeah, it's such a strange thing. I'm the sort of writer who, when a book comes out, I've always made a habit of going to as many bookstores and libraries to visit with readers as I can. And it's a part that, though it's difficult for me because I'm an introspective and shy by nature person, that I love because it's a chance to talk about the work that's so important to me. And the virtual events that I've done have been terrific. You know, they've been well attended. I just did one last night, and afterwards received a note from a reader. I think they were in Maryland who wouldn't have, of course, been able to attend the event otherwise. And so in that respect, it's terrific, but it's just so strange to sit and stare at your computer as though you were speaking to a room full of people. And I don't know, I mean, I'm not quite vain enough to have gone back and watched any of the events. And I don't know if it's as revealing and as engaging for the attendees as it is in real life. But I think that what is true, regardless of any of those questions, is that everyone is doing their best, the booksellers, the publishers, the writers, the readers, to maintain some sense of normalcy. And the reason that people are doing these events is that readers require it. They want it. They want to feel connected to the author. And that hasn't changed in this time where so many other things have. And to me, that's the relief, right? Like, that's the thing that is indication to me of how important our job is as writers, but also as readers. We're still engaged with the imaginary world.
And obviously, I think reading and the importance of reading and the comfort of reading for readers has really been thrown into stark relief by the pandemic. Because readers, you know, kind of watched everybody else running around being cabin fevery. I have to stay home. And readers are like, oh, thank goodness.
Exactly.
I've been pouting. How come everybody else gets to stay home and read and I can't stay home and read? So I've, you know,
exactly,
been doing a little bit of pouting, I have to say. Here's most annoying question. It's got to be one of the most annoying questions that authors get asked. They've just completed a book. They're riding high on its success. And some idiot journalist says, what's next? What are you writing next? What are you working on?
You know, it's so funny because one of the things that has been just terrific for me is that over the course of this summer, I finished another novel, which I never would have been able to do if I'd been out promoting this one. So I guess this is the silver lining in all of this. And it's also a book that takes place largely in Duluth. It's a story about ski jumpers and a pair of brothers and their father who have their own difficulties, but who are bound together by the sport of ski jumping. And I was a ski jumper when I was a kid, and so spent a lot of time up in Duluth at Chester Bowl. So obviously those jumps are gone now, but and relied on those memories and a lot of photographs of them to conjure up those memories of my own as a kid. And I put the guy who's the main character. He has a house in Duluth, right up by UMD in the novel.
Oh, fantastic. I probably lived in the neighborhood. I know I lived in the neighborhood for a while. You never know. He might have been my neighbor. Well,
exactly.
When can we expect a conversation about this book on our air?
Hopefully, I mean, I've just finished the first draft a couple of weeks ago, so I've got a few months of revising and editing ahead of me, and then we'll see what happens. But hopefully in a year and a half or something like that, 2 years is usually about how long it takes for a book to go from finish in the author's hands to finish in the world. So
wow,
we'll keep our fingers crossed for that.
Oh, Peter, how exciting. What a wonderful conversation and some great news for fans of your work and, of course, for fans of our community up here. Peter, thanks so much for joining us this morning. What
My
a treat.
Pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Peter Guy is the author of Northernmost, and he joined us this morning on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on Northland Morning is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.